Blog Talk Radio.
Brother Louis Armstrong, you've helped us get through another fine year, and we're wrapping it up. Hello, everyone. You've discovered us again at Masonic Effects, where we try to keep the conversation alive with the types of things that are difficult or strained or not happening in lodges, many lodges around the world, I must say. Thank you very much for the wonderful Christmas present, excuse me, the support, full marks to all of you for getting the word out there. It's wonderful and very gratifying to know that this is having some effect, some purpose, serving an ether and answering some questions. So today's program, I think you'll find really interesting. We're talking about the vitality through diversity. It's been it's the season of the year, so I need to set the tone, don't I? Of course, this is the 20th day of December, 2015. We only have a few days left in the year. Solstice is tomorrow. My goodness, 11:49 p.m. So everybody about there craning their necks, I hope, doing druidic type things. The fact that here we're celebrating celebrating at this time of year certainly stretches our roots back into pagan times, a little homage to them. The term pagan being a tip of the hat to the Catholic Church for bringing it to our attention that they were the new, revised, and much improved faith on the planet. And of course, we needed to vilify the other competing messianic religions. So a little tip of the hat to them. I can't remember how far back was that. So was that like maybe 9th century? correct me if I'm wrong here. Listen to this, and Merry Christmas to everybody. It was, it's been a special year, and we want to begin to wrap up Masonic Effects in true Masonic kind. No need to talk about. Listen to me chattering away here. I must be excited. No need to talk about the accomplishments of Masons. That's, I think, done, and still leaves us wanting, doesn't it? I want to talk to you about some ideas about the Exodus, the pilgrimage, I guess we'll put it that way. People that sort of visit our way station, come in, sample our goods, and then don't come back. Sample our goods, and then don't feel that connection. And I want to talk to you about, very frankly, here about the spiritual connection. Oh, my goodness, did I say that out loud? Was that just a thought, or did I say that out loud? We'll bring that full circle. But first, here's a little something from the Chichester Festival Theater that I think you're going to like.
Twist the night before Christmas, all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
Stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads.
And Mama, in her kerchief, and I, in my cap, had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap.
When out on the lawn, there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter.
Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below.
When what to my wondering eyes should appear, a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer.
With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a minute it must be St. Nick.
More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen.
To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky.
So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too.
And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof.
I drew in my head and was turning around. Down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound.
He was dressed in all fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot.
A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler, just opening his pack.
His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as snow.
His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry.
The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it encircled his head like a wreath.
He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed, like a bowl full of jelly.
He was chubby, plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself.
A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk.
Laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew, like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, as he flew out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
What's not to like? What's not to like? It's Christmas time. A time of mystery, a time of celebration, a time of accounting, for our time of reckoning, a time of camaraderie and goodwill, a time where we express the spiritual nature of our humanity. And it's a wonderful time of year if you look for it, or not, in order to make it what it can be. The true Mason will reach inside his heart, look for the joy around, look for the success. No place for the cup half empty, Masons. The cynics are bystanders for this occasion. They'll sit in the bleachers mocking the performance, mocking the the authenticity of the celebration, because that's the way they've been been influenced. They're wandering. Those are the prodigal sons who haven't quite returned to the fold. We have a lot in Freemasonry, a lot of prodigal sons. So let's start with that kind of a attitude today, that this, we're talking about Freemasonry in the context of the wonder and miracle that is life. What could possibly be as remarkable as Freemasonry? But we need to really, I think, stop living in the shadow of the past. We are, after all, guided to seek light, enlightenment. But that's, I want to put it in context. The part of the narrative and the conversation about Freemasonry has been contentious from early days. And I want to, I'm going to politely be influenced by the work of John M. Grange, brother John M. Grange, and talk to you about the need for meaning in Freemasonry. We've spent centuries talking about the accomplishments. And if you think about it, the idea is to repeatedly talk about the many and varied great accomplishments, great and small, performed by or perpetrated on the world by those masters of generosity, Freemasons. And by the thinking is obvious that by listening to these stories about the accomplishments of other people, that will help to shape your character and shape your sense of principles. It's like it's in my mind, and I think in the mind of a lot of people, like a pantomime. Instead of adding the, instead of saying the words out loud, instead of, you know, when we say them, put them this to words, then it can be discussed and debated, and that's how we arrive at meaning out of substance through that discussion. That's our human nature. The alert and bright will look around, so. And notice observation, and how often have you heard us talk on Masonic Effects about the revelation of our behavior? Our behavior reveals all. It can't be disguised. The hesitation, the ill-mannered quip, or the lack of manners hidden in sarcasm. You know, all those types of things. There's a validity to our behavior. And then we have those pious people that walk around with a pickle stuck up their, as if being a good person is a competition, as if being a good person is the measure in their mind alone. Oh my, how grim that would be. How mediocre. And that is a very mediocre thought process. So that's the competition that goes on within Freemasonry. We have to compete to be the best boy. And we hear people with that overacting when they're doing ritual. You know, that you've heard that syrupy, syrupiness that makes you just want to go over and tell the boy he doesn't have to do that. You can go and throw a rock in the, skip a rock on the surface of the pond. You can even step in the pond if you care to. Nobody's going to punish you for just being who you are. Merry Christmas, everybody. But we need to ask some questions. Can we talk a little bit about serious stuff? Today we've got a lot of really wonderful music but going on. But first, we have to talk about, I want to read my commentary to you about the vital vitality through diversity. I'm saying this is the missing role of classicism in contemporary masonry. I thought that was a title that really captured my mood and thoughts at the time I wrote this. Don't you think, and here's a question to you, don't you think we've been at the banquet table a little too long? We penetrates the walls of lodges, not as the welcome fragrance of sandalwood or the calming of lavender. Indifference, it has almost lost any pretense of subtlety. And surely we must not fall prey to a complete loss of objectivity. The walls we build are very thick and sound. No need for the aesthetic. Or is there? I sometimes think we have been very good stewards. We haven't been very good stewards of the craft. And as a result, we feel impermanent. So many things change with time. Time moving at the pace of nature is a harsh, unyielding judge, but one that has stealth on her side. No epoch, but gradual death by a thousand self-induced cuts. Time has shifted us off our foundations. And today, we have begun to pick through the rubble to salvage as much as we rebuild. And that is where a singular advantage comes into play. First, 21st century Freemasonry can claim we have saved the best for last. Let's say best for now. Now that our labors have slowed into a steady rhythm, we can begin to concentrate our attention on the big picture, the bigger purpose, the key questions that are posed to a thinking man. We learn most about our own character when we begin the observation of others, which may be why Freemasonry has left best for last, giving us all an amazing opportunity. The so-called me generation has finally come of age. Breaking through indifference means ending the practice of frog boiling, one that is noticed in many lodges throughout Masonry. You know, frog boiling? If you throw a frog into a boiling pot of water, it'll immediately jump out. But if you very gradually increase the heat, you'll eventually kill the animal. The study of the classics, making distinctions between various classical systems and ideals, can enrich understanding and promote appreciation of different peoples the world over. By doing that, we revive the legacy of Freemasonry to the position it richly deserves. But enough of that. Is Freemasonry on the decline? Far from encouraging statistics suggest that this could be the case. What is the cause? And what can be done to reverse these trends? The future well-being of the craft critically depends on its ability to recruit new members. Recruit. Let's say the term is appeal to new members. And even more importantly, to retain them. Freemasonry should both challenge and inspire the candidate from the moment of his initiation. Experience shows, however, that he often remains in the darkness of ignorance simply because nobody has taken the trouble to explain what it all means as he passes through the degrees. This lack of encouragement in the early days may result in our newly made brother leaving the order following a short period of bewilderment. Does such bewilderment lead to many of those who do not leave our order relegating the ritual and its profound meaning to a secondary and minor place in their Masonic life? One brother has affirmed that Masonry is nothing more than a social club. If that is the wish and vision of the great majority of brethren and of our rulers, then so be it. Or in an age where true happiness in life seems to be evaporating and depression is rising, do many seek to join our craft with high expectations of entering onto a path towards illumination of the meaning of life, the universe, and everything that can become bitterly disillusioned? And everything but then becoming bitterly disillusioned. Surely our raison d'etre is and always has been far higher and nobler. In the 1920s, the president of the Board of General Purpose, Sir Alfred Robbins, wrote, "Our craft is built on the solid rock of reverential belief in the eternal and an inner realization of his revealed will and word." Unhappily, there are too many Masons who speak of our brotherhood as if it were no more than a dining club, or at best a benefit society. Those of us who have been closely associated with Masonic endeavor for many years realize that if it were not for the spiritual side of Masonry, the craft would long ago have died. But is spirituality merely a side of our craft, or is it our very heart and soul? In the November 1915 edition of The Builder, Brother J. H. Morrow of California wrote, "It is a misnomer to speak of the spiritual side of Masonry. If there be another side, it is foreign to our order, and I know it not. Spirituality is the life of Masonry. Blessed is he who is privileged to partake of it and to help rebuild the temple of King Solomon." As one would expect of something so transcendental in meaning, there is no clear definition of spirituality. But in a book entitled Spirituality for Dummies, by Sharon Janis, it is described as the wellspring of divinity that pulsates, dances, and flows as the source and essence of every soul. This, in turn, is linked to a personal search for meaning and purpose in life, and to connecting with an inner vision of joy, love, and wisdom that can change and uplift the world. This kind of definition reflects very closely the grand principles of our order. All this is clearly and unambiguously acknowledged. Freemasonry is a society of men concerned with moral and spiritual values. Man is not simply a practical thing, says the Supreme Grand Chapter of England. He has an essential spiritual aspect to his nature. That spiritual aspect is introduced in the third, in which the candidate is led to a contemplation of man's inevitable destiny. In that sense, pure ancient masonry can be seen as a journey of self-knowledge and discovery, not replacing, but reinforcing and supporting what he has learned from his religion. Since its very beginnings, and even on account of its beginnings, Freemasonry has never been a stranger to deep philosophical speculation. A glorious example is afforded in the papers published in Ars Quattro Coronatum by Brother Sidney Klein over a 15-year period. This is from 1912, entitled Hidden Mystery Number 7, The Real Personality or Transcendental Ego, which is a wonderful, wide-ranging commentary in the place of humankind in the space-time continuum. The response to this paper by Worshipful Master Brother Simpson stated that it would be wrong to conclude that such science-based studies are irrelevant to Freemasonry, as the principles that form the foundation of our fraternity are beautifully illustrated by the phenomena of the material universe created by the great architect. He cited those truly inspiring lines. The universe is the temple of the deity we serve. Wisdom, strength, and are about his throne as pillars of his work. It is the spiritual part of our being that is primarily akin to and in unison with the divine. Lest we forget in the common round of Masonic ritual and social gathering, it is sometimes well to pause and reflect upon that. I venture to think is what we think is the higher, perhaps holier aspect of Freemasonry when we do that. It's clear that not all of our thousands of brethren will be interested in or have an aptitude for scientific or philosophical speculation. But all will know our three grand principles and will understand that our craft affords a journey towards love. All will have been charged to unite in the grand design of being happy and communicating happiness, and can appreciate the true enjoyment as a spiritual value. The word enjoyment was introduced in the English language by the 14th century mystic Julian of Norwich, and used 75 times in her book, Revelations of Divine Love. The very nature of our symbolism points to these great truths, and for almost 300 years, numerous devoted and enlightened Masons have endeavored to clarify and expound on the inner meaning of many symbols. In attempts to continue this grand Masonic tradition, a number of initiatives have been started. Rather than just explaining and talking about what Masons do, we sorely need such initiatives to talk about, to mentor, form ideas and challenge, particularly for the brethren who deserve much more than that which at the present time the craft seems able and willing to give them. They deserve that. Some may consider a call for such a discussion contrary to or even heretical to the contemporary English Freemasonry, but let them take heed of words from an introduction to a book on Paracelsus. That's the Renaissance thinker. It is so easy to be orthodox and to reap honors by repeating what people expect and wish to hear. Progress, however, is achieved through the clash of ideas, and heretics like Paracelsus are a ferment without which there would be no life. What say you? Thank you. That's from the Nutcracker, Tchaikovsky. Had to have a little Russian reference in here. Waltz of the Snowflakes. The importance of it? To want to see a performance ritual at its best, you see in the very movement of a hand, the extension of a smile, the absolute joy coming off the stage of a ballet company. It expresses an intensity and an effort by all of the performers to please the audience, to convey the unrivaled message and these perennial storylines. And why? Why would that be ever important? That's the struggle, the pushback, I find, to ennui, that indifference. It's impossible to be indifferent when you're exposed to such true commitment. Impossible. Unless you're a very, very sick person, sick and on your... No, even on your deathbed, that's what inspires. So... here, this is from, have a peek. This is from Mackay's Revised Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. I just read you a little bit about what we are. This is Freemason, eh? Just to check. And this really fits in. This fits in beautifully because it fits in between freedom and free will. I think it's just remarkable. Remarkable. Here, he says, when did this one come out? This was from, just bear with me here a second. Albert Galantine Mackay, a bit of a staunch old Presbyterian fellow, isn't it? This was printed in Chicago, Toronto, New York, and London. Obviously, has the fingerprints and work and effort of a Scottish writer all over it. This copyright, the copy I have is 1912. And it says, the Grand Lodge of England on September 1st, 1847, erased from their list of qualifications of candidate the word freeborn and substituted for it free man. Their rule now reads, every candidate must be a free man. This has been generally considered in other countries as the violation of a landmark. Forthright country, huh? Freemason, one who has been initiated into the mysteries of the fraternity of Freemasonry. Freemasons are so-called to distinguish them from the operative or stonemasons, who constituted an inferior class of workmen, and out of whom they sprang. The meaning of the epithet free, as applied to Mason, is given under the word free. In the old lectures of the 18th century, a Freemason was described as being a free man born of a free woman, brother to a king, fellow to a prince, or companion to a beggar, if a Mason. And by this was meant to indicate the universality of the brotherhood. The word Freemason was until recently divided into two words, sometimes with and sometimes without a hyphen, and we shall find in all the old books and manuscripts the two words Freemason or hyphenated Freemason. But this usage has generally been abandoned by writers, and Freemason is usually spelled as one word. The old constitutions constantly used the word Mason. Yet the word was employed at a very early period in the parish registers of England and by some writers. Thus, in the register of the parish of Asbury, we find these items. In 1685, Smallwood Joseph, brothers Joseph Henshaw, Freemason, baptized, third degree, died November. But the most singular passage is one found in Caudray's Treasures of Similes, published in 1609, and which he copied from Bishop Coverdale's translation of Werdmuller's A Spiritual and Most Precious Pearl, which was published in 1550. And it is as follows. As the Freemason heweth the hard stones, heweth the hard stones, even so God, the heavenly Freemason, buildeth the Christian church. But in fact, the word was used in a much earlier period. Steinbrenner says in his Origin and Early History of Masonry, on page 110, for the first time in a statute passed in 1350, and on the 25th year of Edward I, were the wages of a master mason fixed at 4 pence, and of other masons at 3 threepence. The original French text of the statute, here, says Steinbrenner, the word Freemason evidently signifies a freestone mason, one who works in free stone, meaning is distinguished from the rough mason who merely built walls of rough unhewn stone. This latter sort of workman was that class called by the Scots masons Cowans, whom the masons were forbidden to work with. Hence, we get the modern use of that word. 10 years after, in 1360, we have a statute of Edward III in which it is ordained that every mason shall finish his work, be it a freestone or rough stone, where the French text of the statute is a little different. Thus, it seems evident that the word Freemason was originally used in contradistinction to rough mason. The old constitution sometimes called these later masons rough layers. And then, a member of the fraternity called more fully free and accepted masons. Early in the 17th century, the societies of Freemasons began to admit honorary members, not connected with the building trades, but supposed to be eminent for architectural or antiquarian learning. These were called accepted Masons, though the term Freemason was often loosely applied to them, and they were admitted to a knowledge of the secret signs instructed in the legendary history of the craft, which had already begun to be developed. The distinction of being an accepted Mason became a fashionable object of ambition, and before the end of the 17th century, the object of the societies of Freemasons seems to have been chiefly social and convivial. Did you see? We're not so out of step, and there is a history. In 1717, under the guidance of the physicist J.T. de Saulnier, 4 of these societies or lodges in London united to form a Grand Lodge. We don't hear his name very often, except if you look for it. United to form Grand Lodge was the four, with a new constitution and ritual and a system of secret signs, the object of the society as reconstituted being mutual help and the promotion of the brotherly feeling among its members. So Brother E. L. Hawkins observes that the earliest instance quoted of the word in this sense is in Ashmole's diary under the date 1646. Later, there's a lot that's happened since 1912. Our historians have been very accurate, so we know that this is a qualified kind of a statement. We no longer subscribe to it because we have other facts, but 2 curious coincidences have been connected with the above year 1375. The first was that the earliest copy of the manuscript constitutions, the Regius manuscript, refers to the customs of that period. And second, that the formation of a wonderful society occasioned by a combination of Masons undertaking not to work without an advance of wage, when summoned from several counties to write of Edward III to rebuild and enlarge Windsor Castle under the direction of William of Wickham, has been placed in the same date, 14th century. Hence, they call themselves Freemasons. Enough, you get the idea. Be pleased to be referred to as a Freemason. Do you see the caution in the earlier work that I spoke to you about by John M. Grange, that some Freemasons would consider this heretical to be addressing the heart of Freemasonry is the spirituality of the to support a man's religious faith. We come along with a belief, an attitude of life. Our goal, though, seems to be related not so much to the guidance of the soul, but the development of character. There. Give me some feedback on that, would you, gentlemen? Masonic Effects@gmail.com. That'll do it. That'll get you through it. Now, it pleases me to no end when I hear, you know, the age, to be able to authenticate the age of these ideas. I think is, you know, a fellow has to be pretty, have very, very limited ability to, you know, to not grasp the significance of something like that. And, you know, it's okay. There are men of some better abilities and greater abilities and some of none. But so be it, you know, so be it. We're talking about enlightenment, and it has, so you decide for yourself, is spirituality an aspect of Freemasonry or is it central? If it's central to the notion of the pursuit, the metaphysics, the pursuit of understanding, if that's the case, then have we ever, not to say that we're revising, but are we now looking at the answer to the problem being somewhere in this question? The problem being, good fellows are coming and they're not staying. They're walking away from us. They're not feeling that connection. And very widely, the things that are going on today are no different than they have been for hundreds of years, it would appear. It would appear, wouldn't it? That being the case, the question is it a revision or is it change? Change, adopting some of the what has already been there, what has always been the underpinning, I would believe, is this notion of the spirituality. When we got together to talk about the exciting ideas of the time, those were cutting edge. Those were not, but we were conservative in our approach. We were thoughtful in our approach. We weren't frivolous and senseless. We weren't ruled by our emotion. We sat down and deliberately looked at and discussed these ideas in privacy, where we wouldn't be vilified by some wag that talking about the idea means you're subscribed to it. Well, grow up. There was no demagoguery. There wasn't any of the Donald Trump kind of stuff that we see going on today, or we hear going on today, fear-mongering. This was the examination of ideas. Now, when we got together, is it feasible that a good time broke up? And that those men, their morality was shaped like ours has been, but their lifestyle was different. Drink loosened tongues just like it does today. Good food. And we can get over our own conceit that we are so much better today. We don't pay attention to those fellows. Our brethren may not have known the consequence of a lot of what they're doing. And therefore, they were committing, you know, their diet was ruinous and their lifestyle was a lot younger. However, we are now, have been, many of us, grown up in an age of a tremendous amount of information. And we've not used it. I say that in not unkindly. We haven't used it to our advantage. So it's almost like you have to skip this generation, I ask, in order for the ideas to take hold. The new generation don't have different attitudes to their eating, different attitude toward the environment. I grew up in the day when life was very simple. The roles were simplified. They were intolerable for a lot of people, but they were simplified, so they appealed to a simple mind. We sprayed DDT, and that took care of the weeds, didn't it? Oh, dear. Ignorance is bliss. So better to stick our head back in the sand. Genie's out of the bottle, brethren. Genie's out of the bottle. So we have work to do. The celebration of Masonry, I think, is around us. We have a unique, here's a little something I want to leave you with from me. We have a unique view of the world as Freemasons. And the solidity of that view reflects continuity. We have traditions. There is history at every turn. Now, I'm not at all satisfied with the lack of the appreciation of the aesthetic. I think that's the plodding nature of Freemasonry in this culture. It lacks that cultural reference. It's it does the job efficiently, but there's no artistry to it. I say that across in my experience. There's no artistry. Or little, it's hidden. It's there, but it's hidden. I don't know why. And the effort, the teachings, are to leave something. Our work, our purpose is to leave something that was better than when we started. We're stewards of the craft. Well, we're not leaving it in better shape. We're not leaving it in better shape than when we started. Look around. Is it time? Can we overcome our own? We can't make these decisions based on emotion. We get anxious about the unknown. Well, isn't that the point of Freemasonry, to look deeply into the darkness, to see what's there and discover? Well, if we're making our decisions, as I think we are, based on the a repellent feeling of anxiety, that we're so worried that out of the pressure and the role of steward, that we could ruin it. Well, here we seem unable to act. The potential to solve this riddle will never be found because of our fear. Our actions are all a continuation of the status quo. We don't see the innovative. But when we hear about it, when we hear a speaker, we applaud that person. It has great appeal. That person, the novelty, has great appeal because it's looking at at our world through a different set of eyes, the eyes of the innovator. This is not a sudden event, but a continuation of things that have gone on before. We've been operating here historically and spiritually without a setting. That makes it a little bit different, difficult. It's pushing it. We're already pushing a piano up a mountain. We do things the hard way. But we don't even have the sense of a home. where we can demonstrate metaphorically the constant construction and refinement and preservation of history. Here, it's transitory. We go to hotels. We have remembrances around us of a heritage inherited. But the mystery of Freemasonry, I'll reveal it here. The mystery of Freemasonry is the fact that it exists and it's so compelling after 300 years. And the stewards are struggling right now, not with the bravado, but with the trend. We can do things that can have short-term effect, but it's all populist. It's a feel-good. We still crave that good feeling. We can't seem to put it aside, pull up our britches and say, well, the next little while, it's going to be hard. If we're going to find, we're going to be satisfied, it'll be in the fact that we're making a continuous effort. And I think that's a satisfaction that every listener out there, every Freemason, should be honored to accept, because I think that's the truth. We work, if you look at the landscape of Freemasonry, there's projects going on all over the place all the time. All the time. This time of Christmas, celebrate it. We're stewards, and we're getting a sense of what's going on. The first thing that the bright mind does is to find the problem, not run around speculating. It's there. Watch. We're discovering it. That's nothing like a little Russian composer trying work, the Dance of the Clowns from the Nutcracker, trying to inspire us. So pour a little something into that cup that you have in front of you, and sit back, deep breaths. Here, do you remember my commentary today? The vitality is in the diversity. The structure of Freemasonry. Let's say you subscribe to the notion that we've been hinting at here, that the heart of Freemasonry beats around the notion of spirituality. The development of character comes from that. And let's say our very dearest friends subscribe to the notion of fraternity, the happiness that's derived from being in the company of good fellows. We have some work to do. Oh, I'll do the unpleasant heavy lifting here. There's a greater gap between the kind of men that we want to come in and the kind of men that will hint at, convey any sense of misogyny. There's no room for that in the 21st century in Freemasonry. The subjugation of women, none. Or homophobia or racism, none. None, none, none. That is a contradiction of our principles. And it can, as the contemporary term is go viral. And I think it has in some instances, in some jurisdictions. Sadly. But we need to be the counterpoint for that. And that's the diversification. And here's the interesting part. If you subscribe to one or the other, respect the other. That's the valence. We don't have a positive charge in a molecule without a negative, or a proton, electron, neutron. We don't. These things have properties. So do we. And we can't have one without the other. We need to be able to move forward in balance. So, how do we do that? Well, of course, it's the art of rhetoric. Oh my goodness, our universities would giggle out loud at me for suggesting. The art of persuasion. This is where the great debates came from. This is where we were taught, oh my goodness, that it is possible to hold competing opinions in your mind at the same time. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You examine the competing opinion. In other words, you look at the world through the eyes of somebody else. You look at yourself through the eyes of somebody else. And by that, you explore in greater depth meaning and existence. So the lesson here, the pathway, seems to be kind of clear. If you are subscribed to the notion of the deeper meaning, being the heart of Freemasonry, which I subscribe to, the notion that even in the 18th century, when we're talking about the conviviality and fraternity being the essence, I think it's feasible that this was misguided. Although it's, you know, a few hundred years later, who am I to say this? I think we wouldn't exist unless there was always that hint of philosophical contentious, the dynamic energy, the draw of the contentious positions. The fecundity, I think, is how it was said, right? That friction, that dynamic tension that draws us together. Well, we're not to be fools. We're to do or conduct ourselves with some degree of manner. And this isn't to say that a person should be tolerant. We should expect better, not the lowest common denominator, but to encourage and rise to the fullest of our potential, even the lowest of the spoke of good fortune. We reach out to him. that's not necessarily tolerating that his thinking, his being, his function, but tolerating the fact that he has a steeper journey, that and tolerating the fact that there are men of ability and men who have less ability. That's a tolerance. So we overcome that sense of that tripe, that, you know, that sense of competition. We compete within our own minds, where we spend most of our own time. Yeah. So is this important? I think it is. We keep the discussion going. And now, and I think there's evidence of this breaking out all over the place. This conversation around education, it's a product of our times, thank goodness. We have new sciences, different and developed sciences than existed back in the day of the antiquarians, the day of the ancients and moderns. And we need to be able to use them. Those are tools, better tools than they had in those days, different. Not that we're throwing out everything old and everything new is better, but there are some things that clearly are better. And we need to be able to roll up our sleeves and use everything, not just the old tools. We need to be able to sort that out in our own mind. What is appropriate? When is the using of a tool a detriment to us? When is using a new tool? The exploration of the mind. When is using that a detriment to us? Unless you're some kind of Philistine, or developing the aesthetic. Well, we've built the foundations of masonry. But we need a structure. We need that because that's what serves a great purpose in large populations. It's a demonstration of permanence. We'll get around to that. If not this generation of stewards, then the next, because the reasoning is becoming compelling. We've been here X amount of years. Where do we hang? Where do we put our coats? Where is our library? Where is our meeting place, our grand meeting place? Well, we'll get there, because that will allow us, when we get there, seeing ourselves in these large cathedrals allows us to redefine masonry, and it creates an energy. And my goodness, I think right now we could use that. So we'll come back to this. We'll come back to this again and again and again. It's coming up to a time of great purpose, though, this time of year. And I hope you and your friends and family and your memories give you great peace. If you have a sense that you've experienced some disappointment, excellent. It tells you that should alone tell you that you're thinking objectively of your existence. Soon the winter solstice marks the longest night and shortest day of the year. It's even within seconds now, because we're just ahead of it. The word itself means when the sun stands still. It's a bit of a misnomer. It really is, because the earth tilts on its axis continuously during the winter solstice, and the sun is furthest from the planet's celestial equator. Yeah, the North Pole will get no sunlight at all. 11:48 p.m. See, we're a little bit south of that where I am. For centuries, this significant date has been celebrated in a lot of different ways. I love the thought of ancient cultures marking solstice with rituals. And so the Romans held a week-long festival called Saturnalia around the solstice, which honored the god Saturn, and it involved feasts and sacrifices and gift giving. Ancient Egyptians honored the rebirth of Ra, the god of the sun. The Celts of the British Isles, they can't say Ireland, but that's where it started, held a celebration during the midwinter solstice as well. And some of their traditions, like gathering mistletoe, persist to this day. Do you remember holly? Holly had a male connotation, and ivy had a female connotation. In certain Wiccan and pagan traditions, the Yule celebration arose from the Celtic story of the battle between the Oak King, which symbolizes the light of the new year, and the Holly King, which represents darkness. Some Wiccan rituals included reenactments of this battle. The birth of Christ is celebrated on December 25th all around the world, Christmas Day. But there's no biblical evidence of Jesus' birth falling on this date. Early Christians debated when it should be celebrated. And some theories suggest that because the Romans already celebrated a festival around the solstice, Christians chose the date to appease the pagans and Romans and co-opt the holiday for their religious needs. Hey, recycling. I like that. Yule, the ancient name for Christmas, they come from Yule, a Scandinavian winter solstice festival. Modern-day Wiccans and Druids still commemorate the solstice as one of the eight solar holidays throughout the year. Wiccans often spend Yule with family and friends and exchange gifts and decorate their homes in red and green and white. These were colors associated with ancient Druid traditions. But today, you have to remember that the Druids, the Romans, made sure that all the Druids were dead, which... Rome, eh? Anyway, so a lot of this is sort of conjecture, but others celebrate with rituals that signify light, like meditating to candles, singing pagan carols, and lighting Yule logs. And then, of course, the Druids celebrate the holiday at Stonehenge, where the visitors gather to watch the sun rise and witness it cast a line that connects the altar stone or the slot and the heel stone. Does it matter? Well, I think in a way I'm recycled energy. I think that's good. We make do with what we have, and we make the best of it. Here, I'm going to have to get out of here soon. This has just been a most pleasant time spent with you. It's always a pleasure. That's why I don't wear a watch when I'm around Freemasons, because truly, there's no other place I would rather be than in your company. Something happened when I walked through a lodge. I can be forever grateful to my mentors for what they did, allowing me and sponsoring me and encouraging me. But something happened when I knelt before the altar for the first time. I was focused on the meaning of the words spoken to me. And when I gave my oath, I gave my oath. And that was between me and my Creator. And I have no hesitation saying that is one of the most profound experiences I could have. And I would think, for right-minded men, it's something he shouldn't deny himself. That's the mystery of Freemasonry, the fact that it lives. I'll be back with you all after Christmas. The staff and sponsorship and the technical support team here at Masonic Effects are all on board with me, and we want to wish you and your loved ones the most merriest of the occasion, and keep a good thought for the less fortunate. And I don't mean that to smack you with those of us who are suffering from fatigue, volunteer fatigue, and the empathy fatigue. We're drained. Recharge your battery. Somebody will have their hand out. There will be a need, and it can seem unrelenting when you're a person of advantage. Keep it all in perspective. Be a good Mason. I'll leave you with some beautiful music that I think is transcendent. This is from King's College, Cambridge. Very, very old tune. Merry Christmas. Thank you.
looking at your nose. Your pied carol being sung by a choir, dressed up like a fool. Everybody knows a turkey and mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny with their eyes all aglow, you'll find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh.
Don't do that to me. This is my favorite song. I hate that.
And so I'm offering.
That's it. I'm firing the production crew.
The kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Ben Pasco, the owner of Ben's Halo Halo Ice Cream.
That's it. That's it. I give up. Unbelievable.